This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
I am Martin Ferretti, and this is I Am Gotham, an exploration of the Batman family throughout history. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. This guy thinks because he's read a few Batman books that he can call himself I Am Gotham and do a Batman show. Yeah, you're right. I don't know anything about Batman. I'm just kidding, I do. I've read quite a bit of Batman, but I haven't read everything Batman, so that's why I wanted to do this podcast. I'm drawing a lot of inspiration from a few friends who I really respect and really enjoy listening to. And those people would be Daryl Taylor, Chris Campbell, Mike Myers from the Gotham by Geeks podcast, which I listen to every week and thoroughly enjoy. But what they do is a little bit different than what I'm going to do here. The format of the show is a little bit more like Mike M's Weekly Reads, which is Mike Myers' weekly podcast on everything that he picks up. And it's kind of based on that, but a little bit different. You know, after reading Batman for, God, I don't even know, since I was like 9 or 10, so what's that, 25 years, I guess, I realized I haven't read every single Batman book. And I know what you're thinking, like, that's kind of obsessive, right? Yeah, you're right, it is. It's a little obsessive. But how can you be, like, so entrenched and engrossed in a character's history and not know every little piece of it? Okay, yeah, so that does sound really obsessive, but it's okay. So what I've decided to do is read every Batman family book from 1939 until the present. And I talked to a few friends of mine, and Aaron Bell from the Rebirth Weekly podcast, he decided that it would take me like 64 years to read this. I don't know how good his calculations are, but I guess that sounds about right. So I think what I might do is, at least for the first year of this podcast, I'm going to kind of tackle a year of Batman at a time. I think that'll kind of help speed things along. Because really, once you start reading the Batman books, it seems like, you know, like, obviously there's a lot of evolution of the character and the Bat family and, you know, all the supporting cast over the years. But really, like, from 1939, I mean, I would probably say until the mid-70s, there really isn't, like, huge stories, okay? And some of you that have read stories in that time frame are going to disagree with me. That's fine. I'm talking about, like, you know, like really big changing, life-changing events that affect the Bat family as a whole. And I think, like, it wasn't until maybe Nightfall that you really start to see that. Yes, you have, like, you know, Death in the Family and all that stuff. But even that is a pretty small self-contained story. So I want to try to get through some of the earlier stuff much quicker so I can really start focusing on a lot of the later stuff. So we'll see how it goes. I may change that plan along the way. Really, I'm doing this for myself because I really do want to read every single thing that's out there. And I know maybe it's going to confuse me at some point because there's going to be so many different variations of stories and histories, and that's fine. But I want to be able to know all that stuff. So that's kind of the plan for this podcast. And like I said, really it's for me, but, you know, you guys are listening. So if you have some ideas on how you would like me to tackle some of this stuff, then by all means, feel free to do so. You can find me on Twitter, of course, at Geekvine. The show's not going to have a Twitter. I can't handle more Twitter accounts. But at Geekvine on Twitter, of course, you can find me on Facebook. And the best way is going to be email, which will be hello@nerdlegion.com. So let's get rolling on some books and see how this goes, huh? So, of course, the first book that I read is Detective Comics number 27 from May 1939. And the title of the story is The Case of the Chemical Syndicate. And I just want to give some background. For those of you that have never read old Detective Comics, I definitely urge you to do so. And even not, like, just for the Batman stories, because a lot of these detective books, for quite a while, until Batman became the focus of them, they were, like, pretty big books, you know, like 64-page specials, and they came out every month. And they had quite a few different stories in here. And yes, they're all detective stories, but they're really in very different genres. Like, you know, there's strict, like, you know, hardcore detective stories. There's like Western detective stories. There's like Peanuts type stories. It's really fascinating to see and read some of those. So if you grab a copy of some of these early issues, they are available on Comixology for like a buck a piece. So I highly recommend, if you're a Batman fan, you should pick those up and read them. But if you're just a fan of comics in general and want to see like what kind of stuff is being done at this time, I think it's fascinating to read them for that as well. And all of them have that feel like when you read comics from this era, it's so interesting to see like the seeds being laid for what comes later in comics. But it's so obvious from reading the stories that comics were like a natural evolution from just like newspaper print comics, you know, like whatever you get on the Sunday paper, like Peanuts or I don't even know. I haven't read a newspaper comic in like 30 years. But you know, like those kind of stories. So the stories are much shorter. They resolve very quickly. And like I said, they really feel like a collection of like a few weeks worth of Sunday comic strips, which is really, it was so enjoyable. Like, I know I was talking to some folks, some friends of mine, and they were talking about how a lot of this golden age stuff was just kind of very outdated. And yeah, like some of it is kind of outdated, but there was so much fun to read. Like I was so amazed, you know. Like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I haven't read everything Batman, but I have read some of these early issues. So like obviously I've read Detective 27 before. What's another one that I read today? Like Detective 31 I've read before. The stuff with the Red Monk, I'll get to in a bit. I've read that stuff before, but you know, not a whole lot. Like maybe some key issues, like First Appearance of Robin, which comes a little bit later. I'll probably discuss that next episode. But I've read some of these big issues before. And I don't know if it's like that I've read them so long ago that they just didn't catch me as much. Or maybe I was so eager to do this podcast and like get all that history, that they really like resonated with me quite a bit this time reading them. And I'm so glad we have digital comics. I know this is like always a big thing for comics readers, like print or digital, like print sucks, digital sucks. Look, neither of them suck, okay? Each have their purpose. Some people prefer digital for certain things. I get it. I used to be a digital only reader. Now I'm mostly a print reader, but I'm doing a little bit of digital as well whenever I can. But it's so interesting how they really fill a niche that we wouldn't have had so many years ago, right? Like, think about it. How likely are you to find a good copy of Detective Comics 27 for a price that you can afford? Like, I'm pretty sure you're more likely to win the lottery, and then you could buy a copy of Detective Comics 27, you know? It's so unlikely. And for, like, a buck, there's no reason why you shouldn't be reading these comics. So, anyway, so the first one I read was Detective Comics number 27, The Case of the Chemical Syndicate. And, like, right away you're introduced to Bruce and Commissioner Gordon, like, in the first panel. And their relationship was really interesting in these first few issues. Because, like, Bruce Wayne is just always hanging out at Commissioner Gordon's house for some reason. And I guess he just wants to, like, get the inside scoop on criminal activities. And we see some of that a little bit later as well. But I just thought it was so funny that Bruce is just hanging out at Commissioner Gordon's house, like, smoking a pipe. And, you know, this is before computers, right? So there's no Batcave, first of all. If you've never read these, there still is no Batcave. We'll get to that. Batcave, I think probably in, I can't remember if it's next episode or in two episodes, but it'll be pretty soon. Batcave comes much later. There are some other interesting differences to what more modern readers might be used to out of Batman. So they're hanging out at Commissioner Gordon's house, and Commissioner Gordon gets a call that the Chemical King has been killed. And he is not a villain, just FYI. He's a guy. He runs a company that makes chemicals, hence the Chemical King. And you got to remember, this is during the Great Depression, right? So while there are a lot of broke people, there are also a lot of very smart businessmen who have monopolized a lot of industry. Even before, obviously before the year, but, you know, like Henry Ford, people like that who were able to consolidate pretty much all manufacturing in one sector. So the Chemical King is kind of like that, except he does have a couple partners. There's Stephen Crane is the Chemical King. There's Paul Rogers and Alfred Stryker. Those three guys run this company. And Crane gets killed, and Batman goes to investigate. And we see Paul Rogers. They go to investigate, and they blame the murder on Lambert, which is Crane's son. And Lambert informs them how it couldn't be him. He tells him, you know, like, I walked into the room, he had a knife in his back, and that's why my fingerprints are on the knife. But, you know, like, my dad was getting death threats. You guys need to investigate. And so as this happens, Paul Rogers, one of the other partners, calls and says, hey, I got a death threat too. You know, like, you need to go investigate this other thing. So it's not the most elaborate detective story, but it does have the basis for a lot of what Batman stories end up becoming. This issue reads like a 5-second synopsis of like a Law and Order episode, right? So anyways, Paul Rogers goes to Stryker's house to see what is going on, to make sure that Stryker's okay. And he gets there and he gets attacked by Jennings, who is Stryker's secretary, and he gets like thrown down into the basement. And Stryker's like, you know, I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna gas you and kill you, so that I can have full control of the company. So it turns out that Stryker is the one that had this whole plot devised to kill his partners and become the sole proprietor of, I think it was Apex Chemical Corporation is the name of the company. The name doesn't matter. So as Rogers is about to get gassed, Batman jumps in through the skylight. Which that was a little confusing. Like, I thought he was thrown in the basement, but, you know, maybe there's skylights in some basements. I have no idea. This is like a lab kind of place. And so Batman jumps in, gets underneath the gas chamber where Paul Rogers is going to get gassed. He takes a handkerchief from somewhere, and I'm assuming maybe from Paul Rogers' pocket, because I'm sure everybody was pimping with their suits and handkerchiefs back then. So he takes a handkerchief and he plugs up the gas nozzle and pulls out a wrench, I'm assuming from his utility belt, and busts the gas chamber open. And Paul Rogers and Batman escape from the gas chamber. But of course, it can't be that easy, right? So Stryker is out there. He's waiting for him. Stryker goes and reveals the plot. Okay, so these three guys were partners, and Stryker wanted control of the company. So he was slowly paying off to own the other guy's shares. And so eventually he would own all of Apex Chemical Corporation. But he didn't want to wait, and he didn't want to pay all these millions and millions of dollars. So he decided, hey, why am I going to wait? Let me just kill these guys, and then I'll own the company. Makes sense to me. So he reveals the plot, and Batman decides, you know, to foil him. So Batman's over fighting Jennings, and then he comes over and tries to stop Stryker from killing Paul Rogers. And as he does so, he shoots Batman in the shoulder. But, you know, Batman's a badass, so he just knocks him out with the left hook. And Stryker falls over a banister and falls down into a chemical vat or an acid tank. And it's kind of interesting to see how the chemical vat becomes important for another character later on. So whenever we get to that, I'll talk a little bit about that. But it's kind of interesting to see, like, there's little things that happen throughout all of these issues that in relation to the issue don't necessarily mean much. They're just kind of part of the story, but it's cool how down the line, some of those elements become more important. And even like seeds other characters, because early on a lot of these characters are very like one-offs, you know, like everybody in this issue you pretty much never see again except Commissioner Gordon and of course Batman and Bruce Wayne. But the next one that I'll be reading or that I'll be discussing, there's a character that has popped in and out of DC history for quite a long time, and we'll end with another character that's been in and out as well. Anyway, so yeah, he falls into the acid tank, and the next day, of course, Bruce goes back to Commissioner Gordon's house to chit chat, and Commissioner Gordon tells him the whole story of how the Batman saved the day, and that's pretty much it. So, of course, this is first Batman appearance, first Jim Gordon appearance. So if you ever happen to get this in print, you'll probably be a fairly rich person. But at least to have for historical reading purposes, it's very cool. Batman does have purple gloves in this issue. And I was looking at the later issues, and it looks like that was gone even by the next issue. And I don't know if that was because these are obviously not originals. I did have an original copy, like a scan of Detective 27, but it's a little difficult to read. Whoever owns that copy, that's they scanned it and shared it to the world, like, praise be to you, because that was it's awesome to see. You know, like, you still see the discoloration and the spine cracks and the staples, like it's very cool. But again, it's 70, what is that, 78 years old? You know, it's a very old comic, so obviously it's not in the best shape and it's kind of hard to read. But if you do get a digital copy, they are all recolored, and it's kind of jarring, to be honest with you, seeing they're recolored. And I don't know if it would have been like that when these books first came out or not. I'm assuming maybe they would, although the paper type would be different, right? This would be like a newspaper pulp paper and not like the glossy stuff that we have now. So maybe that's why the colors seem a little jarring in some respects. Not so much in this issue, but some of the other ones, it's a little bit more obvious. They're just so bright, and it feels weird. Maybe because I'm expecting it to look old and decrepit. I don't even know. But yeah, so purple gloves, which, you know, whatever. They don't match the costume, but you know, it doesn't really matter. But overall, like, the design is pretty much what we've come to know and love. There's some differences, and all these things, like, they evolve pretty quickly. Like, the stuff that you can tell looks weird in this Detective 27, like, it starts getting fixed by Detective 28. And I think by, like, Detective... So the last issue we'll be doing today is Detective 34. By Detective 34, like, it really looks like the Batman that we're used to, right? So over the years, like, they've changed the symbol. Like, maybe the boots are a little bit different, or the gloves are a little bit different, or the color scheme's a little bit different. But overall, I think Batman has looked the same for quite a long time. Don't even talk about, like, muscle build or anything like that. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about costume design. But in Detective 27, like, he's very much looks like a bat. Like, the ears are pointy and a little bit long, but they're much lower to the face. It's like they come out of the side of the head, like, directly from his ears, and not kind of the top of the head, which is what most modern readers would be used to. And I watched The Tick recently on Amazon Prime, and it wasn't the best Tick, but I have a soft spot in my heart for The Tick. If you've ever seen or read The Tick, the comic, and you know who the Flatermouse is, the costume is a lot more like that. Like, it actually looks like a real bat, except, of course, you know, Batman has the black and blue and not the white that the Flatermouse has. Or what is it, brown and dark brown and white. Anyways, so very cool to see the evolution of the overall costume throughout some of these issues, even if they are just minor tweaks. So that was cool to see. And again, this is, you know, one story in many in Detective 27. So there's Tenderfoot, Speed Song, there's Ace Investigator, Buck Marshall, Range Detective. There's a Spy by Siegel and Schuster. So again, I highly recommend, you can probably find copies of this online somewhere, nefarious. If that's how you get your comics, that's up to you. But seriously, for a buck or two, like, there's no reason you shouldn't be just picking these up and reading them. And then you can tell me what you thought about them by emailing me, hello@nerdlegion.com. So let's talk about the next issue, which is Detective Comics number 28 from June 1939. And it's called Frenchie Blake's Jewel Gang. Because we all know that in the 30s, there were all kinds of gangs. And jewel gangs. And whatever other gangs. I don't know. A lot of gangs in the 30s, right? It is the Great Depression. So gangsters were, I suppose, commonplace. But also, in many ways, they were, I don't want to say worship. That's a little too much. But, you know, they were the kind of people that they knew they wanted something and needed something, and they went out and got it. And a lot of people didn't have the means to do that. And so, you know, the gangs were commonplace. It was like, you know, everyone's got that little bad boy in them, right? Regardless of how good you are and how gentle and generous you are, everyone's got a little bit of bad inside them. And I think that's why there's so many gangster stories in this era. Not only were gangsters kind of a thing in real life, but everyone kind of want to see that, you know? They want to be the bad guy sometimes. Even I want to be the bad guy sometimes. Now, as much as I love Batman, I love the Joker just as much. There's a lot of villains that I really love, but I'll get to that whenever we start seeing the introduction of the more familiar Rogues Gallery. So anyways, let's get to Detective number 28. Like I said, 1939, Frenchie Blake's Jewel Gang. So the issue kicks off with Bruce Wayne masking his voice and pretending to be Commissioner Gordon. As we all know by now, Batman is an expert at masking his voice. So I think this is the first time we see that. And it's kind of funny that he would pretend to be Gordon. But the reason he's pretending to be Gordon is that he's trying to get information on this gang of jewel thieves. And so he calls Gimpy, who is a police informant. They call it a stool pigeon here, which I hadn't heard that term in quite a long time. But it stems from, stool pigeon's an interesting term. I don't want to go into linguistics here. Look it up if you're a linguistics nerd like I am. But so he calls Gimpy, and Gimpy knows kind of the underworld of, it's not Gotham yet. It's just called the Metropolis for right now. It's it gets introduced as Gotham a little bit later, but, he knows the underbelly of the city. And he knows where this jewel gang is going to strike next. So Batman goes on the hunt for these jewel thieves and gets into a fight with them. And as they're fighting, the police department shows up, two police officers show up, and they think that Batman is part of this jewel thief gang. And Batman drops the bag of jewels. He's already beat up the jewel thieves and goes to grab the bag of jewels when the police show up. He drops the bag, jumps off the building, he freaking lassos himself onto another building to escape. It's cool. This is like when you start seeing, like, the cool Batman escapes. Like, throughout much of these early books, the silk lasso is a huge part of Batman's arsenal of tools. And obviously the silk lasso changes quite a bit throughout time. But for right now, it's really just the silk rope, because silk is super strong, right? So it can hold Batman's weight. And so he jumps off the building and lassos onto another building and escapes. And so now the police department think that, yes, there are these jewel thieves, but Batman is, like, the head guy. Okay, he's not necessarily, like, a good guy. He might be up to some nefarious stuff. Which, again, we see a lot throughout Batman history where he is seen as a criminal or as part of some heist. And really, he's not. And in later stories, we see Batman slash Bruce, or, you know, use this to his advantage. And he definitely does that here. So he's fine with the police department thinking that he's a jewel thief, because, in his words, it'll make the jewel thieves kind of not be aware that he's watching them. Because, of course, he's a detective, right? He's got to hide in the shadows. So, anyways, he finds where the jewel thieves are holed up, and Frenchie Blake is the head guy, the head jewel thief. And so he goes, he busts into Frenchie Blake's room and, like, ties him up with his lasso and throws him out a window. And he does that because, you know, we've seen this in movies and comics throughout. Like, that's one way that he uses to interrogate people and try to get what he wants out of them. Because later on he doesn't kill, but I think in these issues that I read for this episode, 27 through 34... I'm pretty sure he kills at least one person in every issue. So for those of you that believe that Batman doesn't kill, not true. Go read early Batman. He kills everybody. And he carries a gun with him at all times. Which he doesn't generally use, but he does carry it. So think about that for a second. Anyways, he's got Frenchie out the window with his silk lasso. And Frenchie goes to confess, so he brings him back in. And Frenchie attacks him. Batman knocks him out, ties him up, and he leaves a note for Commissioner Gordon to tell him, hey, like, this is the Jewel Gang. I'm not part of the gang. I infiltrated them to get you the jewels back. And he says, Dear Commissioner, I thought you might like to have the leader of the Jewel Gang. I'm also leaving his confession and stolen jewels. Till we meet again, I remain the Batman. Very cool way to end this. It's kind of funny. One thing I want to point out is the Batmobile. Because we saw it a little bit in the last issue, but we really see it in this issue, and the Batmobile is so different from what we're used to. The Batmobile here is still just a regular car. Well, let me rephrase that. It's a normal-looking car, but it's not a regular car, right? Like, it's been souped up, supercharged, whatever. Super powerful car. But it's just the car. It's a red car. And I was trying to figure out what kind of car it is. And I didn't see anything anywhere that would tell me the model. I was looking around to see some of the cars that were popular at this time. And to me, it looks like a Chrysler Imperial. But for those of you that are Batman fans, as I am, that might know some more history that I don't, by all means, email me. You'll find me on Twitter, whatever. Let me know. If you know what kind of car it is, I want to get, like, a little toy model replica of this car because it is super cool looking. I love cars from this era. I think they're so stylish. And I don't even know, like, how much cars cost at this time, but, like, every car looks like it could be worth $1 million. You know, you often see, like, those kind of gangster cars in gangster movies and in comics, obviously. But this car looks freaking awesome. So let me know if you know what model of car it is. I would love to see that. But yeah, I guess this is technically the first appearance of the Batmobile, kind of. Not in the way that we know it. I think we'll talk about that next episode. But let's go on to the next book, yeah? So the next book is Detective Comics number 29 from July 1939. The Batman meets Dr. Death. And Detective 30, I'm going to put in with this because it's a two-part story, 29 and 30. They can be read separately, but really it is a two-part story. There are two different plots for these issues, but they both center around Dr. Death. So Detective 30 is the return of Dr. Death. I guess Detective or Dr. Death is the first major villain that Batman has, the first arch nemesis. And, you know, by now I think everyone just feels like Joker is the arch nemesis. But, you know, back then it wasn't like that, right? We don't have the Joker until a little bit later, to 1940. So Dr. Death is the first arch nemesis that Batman has, and he's got his little lackey, Jabba. And it's very different from today, right? Like, Jabba is a giant Indian man with with a turban. Because, of course, every Indian man wears a turban, right? Dr. Death's lackeys, the two that we see in this two-part arc, Jabba in issue number 29, and then Mikhail in issue 30, they're both, like, very racist representations of other cultures. So Jabba is a giant Indian man with a turban, and Mikhail is a Cossack, so he's from the Ukraine, I would assume. And he's got the little, I don't even know what that hat is called. He wears a little hat also, just like Jabba does. If you've ever seen like those performers that had the monkey would like turn the crank on the box, and then, you know, like the monkey would dance around while he played the accordion. The hat that the monkey wears in those things, that's what Mikhail wears. And, of course, he's a Cossack, and, of course, Cossacks have swords on the side of their pants, their fluffy MC Hammer pants. Anyway, so those are the two sidekicks that Dr. Death has in this two-part arc. And the reason Mikhail becomes the new head lackey is because Batman kills Jabba in issue 29. Spoiler alert! I guess you can't really spoil a comic that's 77 years old, yeah? All right, so let's do a little plot synopsis here of issue 29. And I guess we'll go right into 30 because they really are kind of together. So the issue opens up, and you have Dr. Death talking to Jabba, kind of planning their little thing. Dr. Death has created this... It's not a serum because it's a gas, but it's made out of pollen. So I want to know what kind of pollen this is, because it's very deadly pollen, and I want to make sure I avoid it. But... you know, he's got this plan to kill some important people in order to draw Batman out and capture him, because he wants to know who Batman is. And then you cut to Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne is hanging out at home. It's not quite Wayne Mansion yet, but it's something like that. Anyways, Bruce Wayne is reading the newspaper, because that's what everyone did in the 30s. And he gets to, like, the classified section, and there's a letter in there for him that says, you know, go to the post office and pick up a letter for John Jones. So Batman goes to the post office to pick up this letter, of course, as Bruce Wayne, not as Batman. So good thing that Dr. Death wasn't smart enough to make the postal office worker his lackey. Otherwise, he would have easily figured out who Batman was. But anyways, he opens the letter, and the letter says to go to Beverly Apartments at 10 p.m., and Dr. Death is going to commit a murder there. Of course, there is no murder. Well, there is, but not quite yet, because really it's just a plan to capture Batman. So very carefully, Batman goes to Beverly Apartments and busts in the window, and there are two goons in there ready to kill Batman. So Batman's fighting these guys, and... you know, of course, Dr. Death is a smart villain, and he has his lackey Jabba waiting in the background, and Jabba shoots Batman in the shoulder, and Batman, because he's Batman and has all these tools, has these little gas pills in his utility belt. So he throws one at Jabba, and he manages to escape. He, like, jumps out the window, and, you know, he's very hurt. So what do you do when you're hurt? You go to the doctor. And so he goes to his family doctor, and he's like, yeah, you know, I was messing around with some of my guns, and I shot myself in the shoulder. And the doctor's like, that's a little weird. Like, first of all, why would you shoot yourself in the shoulder? And second of all, like, there's no gunshot residue anywhere, no gunpowder residue on your clothes. And he's like, I'm just so silly. Silly Bruce Wayne. So anyways, the doctor patches him up, and he goes on the search for Dr. Death again. And he finds Dr. Death's hideout, which villains really need better hideouts, because Dr. Death lives in a giant mansion. And so Batman goes in there, they have a little fight, they chase each other throughout, Batman kills Jabba, as I mentioned earlier, and I think he like lassos his neck to death. It's pretty gruesome. No, it's not gruesome at all, but he does kill him, and he goes chasing after Dr. Death. Dr. Death goes into his secret underground laboratory and burns the whole thing down, burns the house down, and manages to escape. And that's kind of the end of issue number 29. When we go to issue 30, we meet Mikhail, the new lackey for Dr. Death. And Dr. Death looks a little bit different. For those of you that have read Hush, he looks a little bit like Hush. He's got the you know, the bandaged face, and kind of his very pimp looking suit. I guess it depends on what iteration of Hush you've seen, but anyway, so to me he looked a little bit like Hush. But he burned his house down, so his face is all disfigured, and it's covered up, and he's got a new plan to get Batman. What is this plan? Well, so I'll tell you what the plan is. So his new thing is he needs money, right? Because he was, as Dr. Death, he had a lot of money. He lived in this huge mansion, but of course he burned it all down to escape Batman. So what he is doing is he's writing powerful people letters saying, if you don't pay me such and such money, I'm going to kill you. And he sends this one of these letters to a Dr. Jones, who we never see because he's dead by the time the issue opens up. And yeah, Dr. Jones has no money because it's the Great Depression, as we come to find out when Batman goes, or when Bruce Wayne goes to interview his widow. He pretends to be a reporter for the Daily Globe, which, if you are reading Action, you know is where Clark Kent works. But Martin, Daily Globe, it's the Daily Planet. Well, you know what? Yes, it is. But right now, it's a Daily Globe. Okay, this is the late 30s. So a lot of these stories are still being fleshed out, and they're not quite the same as what we know now. So anyways, he interviews this widow, and she's like, yeah, you know, we lost all our money in the Great Depression, so of course we can't pay the $500,000 to save my husband's life, so he was killed. But she informs Bruce Wayne that she does have these diamonds that she's hiding in the house. And Dr. Death knows this, so he sends Mikhail to go and break into Mrs. Jones' house to steal the diamonds. And, you know, Batman knows this is going to happen, so he's there waiting for Mikhail. He and Mikhail start going at it, and Batman left hooks him out the window. Yes, Batman loves left hooking people out windows in the early detective stories. And it's cool. It reminds me a lot of, like, Batman 66. Like, not that campy, but, you know, like the left hook, pow, right hook, boom. Yeah, it's very enjoyable. Anyway, so he knocks him out and saves Mrs. Jones and takes her away. But of course, he wants to catch Dr. Death, right? He's the bad guy. He's got to catch him. So he takes the bag of diamonds and leaves them next to Mikhail's body. Mikhail's knocked out unconscious. So when Mikhail wakes up, he's like, oh, good thing, you know, the Batman didn't get these diamonds. Let me go to Dr. Death. Obviously, the lackeys are not the smartest people in these stories. Anyway, so Mikhail goes to meet Dr. Death and give him the diamonds. And Dr. Death is... he's assumed a secret identity of Ivan Hurd, the pawn shop broker. Which I guess makes sense, right? I think maybe at this period of time, pawn shops were even bigger than they are now. And, you know, it's the Great Depression, so whatever people had that they could sell to make ends meet, they would go to the pawn shop. So it kind of makes sense to me that they would use the pawn shop broker as kind of a villain in the story. Because it seems like maybe people would actually see pawn shops in that way at this time. You know, yeah, they're getting money for their stuff, but obviously at a pawn shop you're not going to get a whole lot. So anyways, Dr. Death is posing as Ivan Hurd. And Batman breaks in there. He's like, I know those diamonds aren't yours. They're Mrs. Jones. I want you to give them back to me and tell me where Dr. Death is. Well, Ivan Heard runs out and Batman lassos him in the neck, because that's his favorite thing to do, is lasso people's necks. And the wig, Ivan Heard's wig falls out. And he's like, oh my God, a wig. He's like, I bet your face is not even real. So he grabs him and pulls his mask off. And you see Dr. Death's new face, which is like very disfigured and dark. He almost looks like Nosferatu. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie. It's a very early vampire movie, a silent movie from the 20s, I think, maybe early 30s. Really good, by the way. And there was a remake with John Malkovich called, oh God, I want to say Diary of a Vampire, but I know that's not right. Anyways, just look it up. The Nosferatu remake with John Malkovich. So he grabs Dr. Death, ties him up, and of course, again, he leaves a note for the police department telling him to return the jewels to Mrs. Jones with compliments of the Batman. All right, so let's talk a little bit about this issue. There's a couple interesting things. So, of course, the silk lasso, which I've mentioned quite a few times, is really, 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 really prominent in this issue. Again, it's very prominent in a lot of these early issues because he doesn't have a lot of tools yet to work with. You know, he's got his little gas pills that he uses to escape. He's got the utility belt, which I guess sometimes holds giant wrenches. I don't know. But the silk lasso is the main thing. You know, it's important when he escapes, so, you know, he can lasso away, go from building to building. But I think Dr. Death is very interesting. And we don't see Dr. Death after this for a long, long time. So it's kind of weird that they would set him up as, like, I mean, they play on it quite a bit in the introduction to these issues that Dr. Death is Batman's arch nemesis. But he doesn't appear after this for like almost 40 years, you know, till the early 80s. There is a retelling of this story in Batman 345 and Detective Comics 512. So, I mean, you're talking 480 issues after this. I think that was 81 or 82. I should have looked it up. But see, he does appear in that. Dr. Death also appears pretty prominently in Batgirl 42 to 44. And he does show up in the Batman War Games story from the mid-2000s as one of the Black Mask's, I guess, goons, allies? I don't know. He briefly appears in that as well. And if you read the New 52 stuff, he does show up in the Year Zero stuff. So issue 25 through 28, 29, he does appear in there as well. And the look is a little bit different. What Greg Capullo did was more of a play on the weird disfigured face that we see in Detective 30. Like, he's very disfigured. He looks very much like Nosferatu. Maybe even more than that. The look in Zero Year is very creepy. If you've seen like some of the creepier takes on Scarecrow, it's almost like that. Like, very, very disfigured. And it's because, you know, it's a slightly tweaked origin story. He is a scientist, but he develops like this bone serum that deforms him really heavily. What's that? There's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Village. I know, M. Night Shyamalan movies. Yes, I get it. Not very good. That's fine. But The Village, if you've ever seen that movie, he looks like, spoiler alert, the monster that they pretend is in the woods. So kind of creepy, very disfigured look. But it's very cool to see Dr. Death popping back in. Because he was the first arch nemesis, right? So, you know, there's a lot of throwaway characters in these early detective stories. But I think Dr. Death is important because he's the first that's more than just a gangster, right? Like, there are gangster characters that are important, like Black Mask, for example, that I already mentioned. But Black Mask is not just a gangster, right? Like, he's super smart. He's very strong. He's not just like the Jewel Thief gang from a couple issues ago, from issue 28. So it's cool to see kind of a rogues gallery start to develop in the Batman universe with this two-part story in Detective 29 and 30. So if you want to read some more Dr. Death, be sure to check those out. Again, it's Batman 345, Detective 512, Batgirl 42-44, Batman War Games, and then Batman Year Zero in New 52. All right, so I guess I'll move on to Detective Comics number 31, and I guess we'll do it with number 32, from September of 39 and October of 39. And this is Batman versus the Vampire, parts 1 and 2. So another two-issue arc. And even though they're two-issue arcs, like I said, these early detective stories, they're very short, you know, because Batman stories were part of a larger book. All the Batman stories that we're discussing today, they're all like 10 to 12 pages long. They're very, very short issues. Because, again, there's five other stories in Detective Comics at this time. So they're very, very short, and so there's not a lot of character development, not a lot of explanation, not a lot of, you know, plot advancement. It's just kind of like, this happens. Batman goes find this guy. Batman saves the day. The end. And anyway, so this is another two-part story, Batman, or Detective 31 and 32. And Detective 31, I posted on Facebook a few weeks ago when I was doing prep for this episode. It is one of my all-time favorite Batman covers. I love this cover. It's so iconic, so Batman, and it's been redone a few times. You know, when I posted the cover, I said that Neil Adams did a really good homage to this cover later on in a Batman cover, and I think that's the one that most people know. But check out the cover for Detective 31. It is absolutely one of my all-time favorites. Even though it's so old and the art is not as polished as what comics have become over the decades, it's a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic cover. So check that out. So yes, first appearance of Julie Madison in this book. And for those of you that maybe haven't read anything older, or haven't read a whole lot of Batman, Julie Madison is Batman's first love interest. It's Bruce Wayne's fiance. And I don't know what's happened to her. Like, yeah, I don't know. I guess the Batman love interest thing doesn't last very long. Because, you know, I think for the most part, superheroes with actual families don't work out very well. Because sometimes the writers can't quite tell the story properly of how having a family and being a vigilante or a superhero fits in. And I think the best example of someone that's done it right is Invincible from Image Comics, which is about to end. But that character had a family for a long time, and it worked out very well. But of course, bad things happen, right? And we're seeing Superman now in Superman and in Action during Rebirth. He has a family. He's got a wife and a kid. And I think for right now, they're doing an amazing job with that. I think maybe in DC, that might be the best example of a hero that can have a family. But Superman's also different than a lot of heroes. But they're doing a bang-up job there. Anyways, Batman's had a ton of love interests, of course. We'll get to them in the many years it will take me to finish this podcast. But Julie Madison was the first. And the issue opens up with Julie Madison kind of in a trance, like a zombie. And she's walking through the streets with her arms raised, just like a zombie. And comes up on this guy, and she's about to kill him. But, of course, Batman saves the day. Or the night, I suppose. And he kind of knocks her out of her trance and goes to take her home. She's like, well, how do you know my name? Like, how do you know where I live? How are you going to take me home? Of course, like, obvious questions that people should be asking. You know, it's like when Batman got shot, we just talked about that a couple issues ago, and he goes to the doctor, and the doctor doesn't even question like how he got shot. Julie is questioning, right? She wants to know, like, who is this Batman guy? How does he know me? How does he know where I live? And of course, you know, he's like, I'm Bruce's friend. Tell Bruce the whole story tomorrow. Anyways, so he takes Julie to the doctor, and Dr. Trent. And I want to say it's the same doctor from before, but maybe not. I don't know. It seems like he's the family doctor, and we've seen him before. But I try to look it up, and apparently there's no more Dr. Trent after this. It's the first and only appearance, so I could be wrong. But for those of you that have read these, let me know if you think that this is the same doctor. I'm curious. Not that it matters. He's kind of one-off anyway. But so Dr. Trent says, hey, like, it looks like you've been hypnotized by a really powerful hypnotist. And what you should do is go on an ocean voyage to Paris, and then maybe you should go to Hungary, the land of history werewolves, which seems not only weird to me, but of course to Bruce, because he's like, why would this guy tell my fiance to, like, go to Paris? That's fine, right? Like, that might give her like a nice vacation, a break, to gather her thoughts. But to go to Hungary, the land of history and werewolves, very odd. But of course, the title of this issue is Batman versus the Vampire, so I guess that's what the connection is. So Bruce Wayne goes back to his home, and he has a hanger with the first appearance of the Bat Gyro, which of course becomes the Bat Plane. But when it first shows up, it's called the Bat Gyro. And it really just looks like a very early plane. Not dual wing, single wing. But the wings, of course, look like bat wings. And it's got a helicopter propeller, because it's a gyro. If you don't know what a gyro is, go look it up. I want one. They seem awesome. Anyway, so he decides he's going to take his bat gyro and his newly crafted tool, the Batarang. Of course, you can't fight crime with just silk lassos. You need batarangs to hit the bad guys. So anyway, yeah, he explains how it's based on like Aboriginal, Australian Aborigine boomerangs. But yes, it's the batarang. And he does use it quite a bit over the next couple issues to knock out bad guys. So it's cool to see the first iteration of the bat plane and the batarang. So Bruce gets in his plane as Batman, and he goes after Julie Madison, who is on her ocean voyage to Paris. Because, remember, this is the late 30s, so we're not doing transcontinental airplane flights yet. Everyone's still taking boats and ships across the ocean. So he's following her on the ship in his bat gyro, kind of from afar. And he lands on the ship to talk to Julie and tell her, you know, like, I'm kind of watching over you. And out of nowhere, this hooded figure shows up and tries to attack Batman and tries to hypnotize him. So now, of course, we know who was trying to hypnotize Julie Madison. And it is the Mad Monk. We'll talk a little bit about the Mad Monk here in a few minutes. But this is the second arch nemesis of Batman that kind of becomes somewhat recurring, I guess, later on. He's not like a huge villain, but he's had his appearances. Anyways, Batman tries to fight the Mad Monk, and he manages to escape back into his bat gyro when the issue ends. And it's kind of weird, to be honest, because he knows the Mad Monk is on the ship with Julie Madison, and yet he just kind of takes off. Shame on you, Batman. You need to take care of your girl. So anyways, he goes to his bat gyro. They get to Paris. And in the next issue, he leaves Julie in Paris. And he goes, or no, he takes Julie with him because he's watching her. So yes, that's what it is. He knows that the Mad Monk is hiding out in Hungary. That's why the doctor said to go to Hungary. So he is trying to find the Mad Monk. He's going all over the place. He comes upon a carriage because apparently in Hungary, they still have, you know, like medieval time carriages pulled by horses. And he attacks the carriage and pulls out this woman from inside. Her name is, I'm going to assume Dayla. It might be Dala. If you want to correct me, feel free. But he gets Dayla, and Dayla is acting a little bit weird because, of course, she is tied in with the Mad Monk. She's actually the Mad Monk's sister. And so he goes to find the Mad Monk in his castle in the Hungarian mountains, and the Mad Monk traps him in a steel net. But fortunately, Batman has his handy new batarangs, which he throws out of the steel net, hits a lever that helps him escape this net. Now, you got to remember, villains must not be very smart at this point. Because if I were these guys, I would make sure that Batman does not have any of his tools or his tool belt. Because you know he's going to escape. He's Batman. Anyways, so Batman escapes. He goes after the Mad Monk. And of course, kind of like we saw with Dr. Death, they're going through the whole hideout. And the Mad Monk drops steel bars from like one of the halls and traps Batman. Batman has to fight this giant gorilla just because why not? I mean, it's the 30s. Everybody wants to find giant gorillas. Everyone knows King Kong, right? So he fights this giant gorilla. He manages to escape the gorilla. And he goes and tries to rescue Julie Madison. Oh, because I forgot. Part of this is he wants Batman to suffer. And so he uses his hypnotic abilities to have Julie Madison walk over to his castle from their hotel room. I don't know how long that must have taken, by the way. Because Batman, like, flies there in his bat gyro. But Julie is walking through the forests of Hungary, up the mountains to this castle. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's still cool. So he saves Julie Madison again. And, you know, what do villains do when they trap the good guy? Is they go to sleep. So Batman's trying to find the Mad Monk and Dayla, and because they're asleep. They're vampires. They're in their coffin. And what do good vampires do? They keep silver everywhere because that's what kills them and that's what they would do. I don't know. So Batman finds a silver statue. He melts it down with his superhuman abilities of silver melting. And he makes silver bullets. He finds the coffins of the Mad Monk and Dayla. And he shoots both of them with the silver bullets that he's made. Because remember, Batman carries a handgun in his utility belt. This is still very, very early on, so he does have a handgun. He shoots them both, kills both Dayla and the Mad Monk. And he goes and takes Julie back to Paris. And of course, since they're both dead, the spell is broken, right? Julie's not hypnotized anymore. So the Mad Monk, we do see the Mad Monk a little bit later on. Batman 350 and 351, which are pretty good issues. Legends of the Dark Knight number 94 is one of my favorite issues of that particular series. The issue is called Stories. And one of those stories in that issue is kind of a retelling of this. So, but obviously much later, right? So, well worth a read. Detective Comics 518, and there was a 6-issue miniseries, Batman and the Mad Monk. So, if you want to read more about the Mad Monk, feel free to pick those up. So, yeah, notable in this, of course, was the Batarangs and the Bat Gyro, which actually by the end... Is it by the end of this issue? I don't know if it's by the end of this issue or... in the next issue, Detective 33. But it's no longer the Bat Gyro. It very quickly becomes called the Bat Plane. So that's shame on you, editors. Bat editing team. I'm just kidding. They just changed the name. It's fine. This thing's evolving, right? It's very early on in Batman history. So those things are cool. It's nice to see Batman becoming Batman, right? These are all very much like year one stories. So it would make sense that he wouldn't start with all his tools. I mean, like, for God's sakes, the man still uses newspaper clippings to do research on villains, right? There's no computers. So it makes sense. It's very cool to see all the stuff evolve as the book progresses. So the next issue I'm going to do like super briefly because it's kind of a one and done. And the story, it was my least favorite out of all the ones that I read. It's Detective 33, November 1939. And it's called The Batman Wars Against the Dirigible of Doom. And if you don't know what a dirigible is, it's a blimp. So yes, there is a blimp of Doom. There's a gang, I think it's the Scarlet Gang is what they're called. And they're headed by this guy who thinks is Napoleon. So he's just going around the Metropolis, so remember that. The Metropolis just using a death ray, using a death ray from this blimp and just blowing stuff up. So the story is like whatever, but there's some very important, really, really important things that are defining who Batman is as a character in this issue. Number one, this is the first time we're seeing Bruce Wayne / Batman's origin story. So it's the first time ever that we see Thomas Wayne and Martha Wayne get killed in Crime Alley. So it's very important. The issue kind of almost starts off with that. It's not like right at the beginning, but it's like second page, I think. So it's good that after, you know, this would be six issues in, we're getting some kind of origin as to who this guy is, right? And you see a great progression of the thought behind Batman from 27 to 33. Because, you know, in 27, like, I was joking, but it really is very campy, right? Like, Bruce is just hanging out with Gordon, trying to get information on crime so he can go stop him. And every issue ends with, like, hey, here's a note, Commissioner Gordon. I saved the day. I'm the Batman. Ha, ha, ha. But by now, like, it's become much more than that, right? There is still, like, a little bit of humor. And, of course, like, it's comics, so, you know, suspension of disbelief on a lot of the stuff that happens. But, you know, now you've got an origin story, and it's a very serious one, right? We all know, like, two people getting killed, that's not something to be taken lightly. But, you know, it shows Thomas and Martha getting killed by Joe Chill, although he's not named. But, you know, we've come to know the character as Joe Chill. And then there's a couple panels of, you know, what happens to Bruce after this. So, you know, he decides to become a scientist because, you know, he wants to make tools to help in his fight with crime. He starts working out because he wants to be strong to fight crime. And, you know, then he's sitting around like all good superheroes do. He sits around trying to come up with a good superhero name. And a bat flies in through his window and he's like, the bat that'll, you know, that'll put fear in criminals' hearts. So, the bat. Of course, that's why he becomes the Batman. And one thing I hadn't mentioned before this is, you know, like I said, there's no Batcave yet. So, like, the Bat-Gyro is in a hangar, I'm assuming, next to Wayne Manor, but we don't know. At least not yet. But he keeps the bat suit in a trunk, which I thought was just amazing. Right? Because by now, like, we're used to Batman going in through a secret passage and going to the Batcave or whatever. But we don't have any of that yet. This is still very much like, I don't want to say proto-Batman, you know. I know I've got some friends, Mike Myers, for example, was just talking about, like, proto-Doctor Strange, proto-Ant-Man, that, you know, the stories that he was just reading very recently. So this is very much Batman, but a lot of it is still very, so early on that they haven't fleshed it out. And so just to see that this guy who fights crime still keeps his costume locked up in a trunk, I thought was pretty fascinating. Anyway, so there's that. The story, like I said, the story is just whatever. I don't know if you would call this the first appearance or the first mention of Arkham, because it's not called Arkham. But it is the first time that you have a criminal mastermind escaping from an insane asylum in Batman. And of course, as we all know, eventually that becomes kind of the norm. You know, like all his villains or all his arch nemeses are crazy and they all get locked up in Gotham. This one is the guy that I was talking about, the guy that thinks he's Napoleon and fights the or flies the dirigible of doom with his death rays, destroying stuff. But it's very cool, you know, like you get little seeds throughout these stories that eventually become so ingrained in what makes Batman Batman, right? And it's stuff that we all know and love. So, you know, to those people that read this and they're like, ugh, it's just a silly 1930s story. Yes, it is. It's very silly. But it's also so important to what comes much later, right? So I don't think you should just brush any of this stuff off, because you really do see the evolution of what becomes, obviously my favorite, but one of the best heroes ever, you know, in many respects. So the last one we're going to talk about tonight is Detective Comics number 34 from December 1939. That's going to wrap up our year one discussion. And this is another kind of one and done villain. It's Doc Dorterre. I don't speak French, so if you do, and I pronounced that wrong, I apologize. But Doc Dorterre is kind of a one-off. And Batman is still in Paris, of course. Julie's hanging out in the background somewhere. And by this point, the Bat-Gyro is so different. You know, like before, it was just kind of a plane with bat wings. Now, like, it literally looks like a bat. It's a giant bat with helicopter propellers on top. Like, he's even got a bat face on the front of the bat plane. And, like, I'm talking about a real bat face. So, just think about that for a second. Remember, Batman is trying to put fear in the minds of criminals. And I guarantee you, if you see a 30-foot bat flying over you, you are going to be scared as hell. Anyways, so Batman's like, Bruce Wayne is walking through Paris. He thinks he sees an old friend of his, Jed Farnell. And it turns out it's not his friend. It's a guy with no face. And, you know, the guy's being, he's looking for a sister. He's being haunted by some guys. Eventually, Bruce runs into the sister, who is being hunted by these guys also, the Parisian Apaches, which is just a gang of dudes in Paris. And Doc Dorterre is their leader. The story is just whatever. Like, I don't want to talk about the story too much, but it's cool to see like some kind of continuity from story to story, you know, where even though a lot of these issues are very much one-offs, and obviously, like I said before, they're very short, they do have like a thread that runs through them, right? Like, it's not like in this issue, Batman's in France, and then in the next issue, he's back in Gotham, or the Metropolis. And then the next issue, he goes to Russia to do something. Like, you know, it all makes sense, right? He left the Metropolis to go to Paris with Julie, and from there, he went to Hungary to fight the Mad Monk, and then now he's making his way back to America. And, you know, he is back in Paris, and then we'll see where he goes next. So I like the fact that they are trying to keep some kind of continuity in these stories, even though they're not directly connected. But there is some connection, right? Because you would expect to, like, be in the life of this guy. You want to know about this guy. You know, what kind of antics is he up to? Anyways, at the end of the story, Batman kills Doc Dorterre. Yes, he kills another guy. Okay. We should have a kill count on this podcast for all the naysayers that say Batman doesn't kill. He might not kill now, guys. He's killed a lot of people. Okay. He's a reformed killer. Anyways, so he gets rid of Doc Dorterre and the Parisian Apaches and saves this brother and sister. And they, you know, they're like, we want to know who you are. Can you tell us who you are? And of course, he's Batman, so he wants to keep his identity secret. And he just says, you know, I can't tell you. Otherwise, that would put me in jeopardy. put my friends in jeopardy. So he just tells him goodbye and he leaves. So that's going to wrap up the issues that we did on this first episode. Detective Comics number 27 through number 34. I hope you guys enjoyed my first foray into this fine journey that I'm... Oh, God, I'm enjoying it so much. when I read these books, like, I'm generally in the room with my wife. And, you know, there used to be a time where she'd be like, what are you doing? And, you know, I'd go into this whole long thing about what I'm doing. Now, like, she doesn't even ask. Like, she just automatically assumes either A, I'm podcasting, or B, I'm reading comics. And generally, she just assumes I'm reading Batman comics. And, of course, it's especially true now as I'm embarking on this journey. But she just laughs sometimes, you know, because, like, I'm in the room and I'm reading these very early Batman stories. And I just, like, giggle, you know, because they are kind of funny. Like, I'm sure they were meant to be a little humorous. But, you know, sometimes they're just funny because they really are kind of outdated. But also funny because they're fun, right? Like, I don't think that every comic needs to be super serious. Like, you know, everything has to mean something. That's not the way it was, or the way it is. And I think that's especially true of these very early stories, right? Where they're just, it's entertainment, right? And so many times, like, we get so engrossed in a character, in a title, in a crossover, in a company, whatever it is. And we forget, like, we're not a part of this story, right? We want to be a part of the story, and that's why we're reading these things. And you shouldn't be judging other people or, you know, judging stories or writers based on what they write or what these characters do. You should just read them to enjoy them and have a good time. You know, there's so many, like, there's people getting killed left and right in the real world. Why, like, make things worse for yourself? You know, why argue with others about what they like? Why tell them that they're wrong for liking it? It's so stupid, you know? And I want this journey to be not just my journey, but, you know, your journey. Because I hope that my reading this will make you want to read it and give you kind of a different appreciation for this character and just see it for what it is, you know? And I hope that if you do read it, you will enjoy him as much as I'm enjoying him. Because I will tell you, I am loving the hell out of this stuff. And if you think it's campy or whatever, yeah, it is. It totally is. But you know what? You should just sit down, read it, enjoy it. And try to see if you can get something new out of it. Right? Try to see it from a different perspective. Try to see comics from a different perspective. Anyways, I don't want to get into an even longer diatribe of things that I shouldn't be talking about. But that's going to be it for episode one of I Am Gotham. Again, I am Martin Ferretti. I am on an infinite number of podcasts on this very fine Nerdy Legion podcast network. What am I in? Valiant Central, Aftershock Central, Nerdy Legion podcast. Anyways, you can, of course, find me on Twitter at Geekvine. You can email me, hello@nerdylegion.com. The website is, yes, nerdylegion.com. And I'm hoping this is on iTunes, like, as soon as I release it. But if not, just subscribe to the feed. Let me know what you think. And until next time, you should think about what you put out into the world and make it a better place. That's not my quote. That's somebody else's quote. But I think it's a fine way to end this podcast. Thanks for listening. And I'll be back next week.